And welcome to this episode of Tones and Drones, an ambient music podcast. I am Jason Miller, and on the program today, my guest is David Helpling. David is returning to the program to have a conversation about his new album. It's called In. It is out today on the Spotted Peccary Music label, and you can find out more about the label and the album by going to spottedpeccary.com or ambientelectronic.com. And it's always fantastic to be able to speak with David, and I hope that you enjoy our conversation. I'm going to be playing some excerpts from the album as we do here on the podcast, and this piece right here is from Disc 2. Yes, it is a double album, a song called Following the Lines. This is Tones and Drones, my conversation with David Helpling. Well, David, thanks for being back on Tones and Drones. I'm so glad you want to return. That's always a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much about being back on Tones and Drones podcast. It's kind of like hanging out with you and talking to you, because we can just like we just did now, we can just drop into conversation about sci-fi or whatever. Yeah, and you're just really easy to talk to. And you really listen to the music, you know, so it's always a great talk, for sure.
Well, thank you for saying that. And this album, double album here. So, and I've got notes on some of the songs, I'm telling you, you know, I put the notes. Double album. Now,
yes.
This is, you don't see a lot of double albums in the world of electronica or ambient styles, really. You don't see it very often.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think the trend these days is to not even make albums, just make singles and EPs and have short songs that really get people's attention. And I obviously am ignoring everything that's popular. And this entire record is is me just doing what I want to do, what drives me, what I think is really beautiful, what the kind of music, you know, I can't even put my music in a genre. And I try not to, because trying to quantify art sometimes is really difficult. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. But
let people listen to this grand scheme of the album. Now, okay, so, you know, this album, well, one of the things I think when we talked on the show, we were talking about, I mentioned your photography, taking, you know, photos of the small world, you know, the micro world. Here's a snail. This is,
yes,
you know, and that, and your fascination with that. And then, you know, I'm reading the liner notes, and that's kind of culminating in part of or all of this album, and in a way, right?
Yeah, well, the concept of the album is kind of twofold, but the first part of it is to literally go in and realize that there is insanely beautiful magic in tiny places, and the smaller the thing, the more amazing it is if you look at it right. And that's not me preaching to people. I'm just saying, hey, I'm sharing my love of the infinite small. And I'm, you know, that's kind of the concept for the album. And the other half was going inward into yourself, and getting right with yourself. Being aware of yourself, whether you have pain or abuse in your past, or you're just trying to get comfortable in your own skin, or you are dealing with anxiety or depression, you know, it's kind of like, be good to yourself, you know, go inward, you know, nurture that, hang out with yourself and realize that you're a cool person. You know, so that together with the macro concept is sort of what came together. You know, I didn't have all of this as an idea when I started writing, because I think, you know, I started writing this album in 2013, so it's been 8 years. But once I had a bunch of songs together, I started to realize that my fascination with tiny things is in every song. A lot of these songs start off with really small sounds, and a lot of the melodies are very simple, but the textures and sounds are really vast and complex, but the music is an elementary, you know, a lot of elementary figures and phrases and things that I found really beautiful, but left me a lot of room sonically. I didn't have so many chord progressions and notes going on that I couldn't really explore huge sounds that have, you know, long reverb tails and stuff like that.
Yeah. A lot of, when I opened up the album, you know, and I encourage those that have the disc to do so, is to look at all of the different textures played by obviously you and a lot of guests on this album.
Yeah.
And just right there, you're going to get before that's going to give you this precursor before you listen to maybe even, I was even paying attention to some of these elements. I was listening for cello. I was ready for the voices.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear what kind of textural guitar was going to be going on versus different lines.
Yeah.
And that really was kind of my gateway into it. Now, one of the things, there's a couple of things that I had gleaned from some of the specific songs, and I'm glad that we can talk about that kind of stuff on the show.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated by the Yamaha CP80, and I know there's the 70 now, and I just learned that in a podcast that'll be coming out later, where we're going to talk about the same instrument from someone else who had one right there by them on the show. So the 1981 Yamaha CP80 Electrogram piano. Now I just learned that you can, because it's always been a patch for me on cheap Yamaha keyboards. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I just learned that it can be played without being amplified. Just
Well,
Rhodes can.
If you look behind me, because we're on Zoom, that's my CP70B.
Okay.
And you can still find a lot of them used. I found this one in San Francisco. It was in great shape. I hired a piano moving company to bring it down to me. Then I had it tuned. And, you know, it's this one is a 73 key electric baby grand piano.
Okay.
So you can play it unplugged. It's a piano. It's kind of dark and has a very warm sound. But there's like this giant guitar pickup, kind of a guitar pickup that goes under all the strings. And it has all these electronics on it, which is really like EQ and preamp. But I bypassed all that stuff, and I wired the output of the pickup right to all my external gear.
Okay.
So I'm not using the electronics from the 80s because it was pretty noisy. But like you said, you've only played the CP70 or CP80 sounds as a patch on a synth or a sample library.
Yeah.
None of them even come close to how infinitely expressive this is, in my opinion. This is more expressive than an acoustic piano.
Okay.
And you're going to go, what? But every time, if you hit one note and just keep hitting it, every time you hit it, it's different. I don't understand. I think because the pickups are so close to the strings, and there are multiple strings for each note, like a traditional piano.
Yeah.
And it has that sound that I grew up with. You know, U2, Simple Minds were the two big places where I heard CP70, CP80 all the time. And they always put them through a chorus or a delay or something. And it was a very specific sound that, you know, you would hear it and go, oh, that's a CP. You know, that's not something else. So when I was able to finally get my hands on a real one, and once I got it in here, and as soon as the day I plugged it into my rig, I immediately dialed in some sounds, and I was playing like New Year's Day. And stuff like that. And
I'm hearing that in my head right now, that CP line.
Yeah. And I was just freaking out. I was freaking out. And so this, having the CP70 in my space, greatly influenced a lot of the songs on In. And there are three songs on the album that happened because the CP was here.
Okay.
Including the opening track.
Okay.
And track 11, which is Bending Towards the Night. I had some other like riffs going, and I had this texture going in a particular frequency and key. And then I just put my hand on that piano and I was like, oh, I got to record that. And after that, you know, well, a couple of years later, it became a produced song. So it's so cool that you pick up on the CP as a, you know, as a vintage instrument, but being, you know, used in modern music and recorded in modern music and processed in a way that's really big and beautiful, you know?
Well, there was like one, so it's a lot of the piano on there. A lot of the piano in there is the CP.
Yeah. I mean, there's other songs that use like a felt piano or acoustic piano, you know, all put through dreamy reverbs for the most part. But the CP, you know, I think you right away you'll hear the difference, you know.
Yeah, there's one song in particular where there's a, I don't know if it's a CP or not, there's a particular piano line, and I'm listening to it, and it you go to like a real dissonance, like in the line.
Yeah.
And it's like you're not expecting it, and I love stuff like that.
That's cool.
That is fantastic, because you hear it, and you go, you think it's going to go there. Nope, it's the dissonance there. Oh, it's a little bit outside right there.
I like surprises. I don't put them in there to surprise people, but I like to surprise myself. I like to have a song begin mysteriously and really get you in love with the vibe of the piece in the first minute without necessarily saying too much. And then maybe when it's time to go to a crescendo, to a bigger section or to a B section or to another act, you know, maybe go somewhere unexpected, not weird, still beautiful, still huge, but someplace that's a little more mysterious, maybe a little Eastern or ethnic, different scales and modes and stuff, you know? So once again, you pick up on all this stuff that I'm into. It's so great talking to you.
Well, you know, and there are, I'm kind of going through those notes, and the song Here All Along, that guitar riff, I could just listen to that one going on in just the loop. And the synthesizer, the drone comes in, you know, underneath it after a bit.
But yep.
That the precision and the tone of that loop is fantastic. When that
Thank
song
you.
Started, I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, those are all guitar harmonics.
That's what they are?
Yeah, they're all harmonics, and it's, you know, it's a phrase that's played, and you know, I wouldn't call it a loop, but it does repeat over time, and it really lays the groundwork for, you know, where the song goes, as you know. So it's really cool that you pick up on that, because I love that sound, and I think if you listen to Here All Along, and you listen to that opening guitar harmonic arpeggiation, I mean, to me, I think you immediately hear a U2 vibe in the tone and that modulation delay. And that's what I've been chasing forever, and I still am trying to get that unforgettable fire, Eno Lanois U2 vibe. So, yeah
it's
super
a timeless
cool.
sound. It's a timeless sound.
Thank you.
It's there. And on also, I'm just going through these notes. We'll go deeper, but
on
the song "The Cold Distance Between,"
yeah.
I wrote "Remember Guitar," because that guitar sounds familiar to me.
Ah.
I don't know what song it is, but there's just this nostalgic familiarity to the guitar in that song.
I think I feel you. I think that the guitar riff is very potent and very produced, but it's super human and live. You know, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But I think maybe because of the scale I'm using and some of the half steps, it might remind you of something from the music I did with John Jenkins from The Crossing. It might remind you a little bit of, there's a song I did on my second record, Sleeping on the Edge of the World, called Sticks and Stones, that might kind of have that sound as well. But The Cold Distance Between is a more aggressive, darker vibe, but still super spacey, I guess I would say.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, there's something about it. It's like, I don't know if it's like a, if it's more of a, it's hard to, I don't like defining stuff in genres. I have a hard time. So I just try to think of maybe some other place that I find.
Yeah.
Also the beginning, the first track on disc one, Waves, Dreams of Breaking, I really like the sequencing so much. It's like the Berlin School term is used so much, but there's this there's like this ambient Berlin thing that I enjoy. It's like, it's the Berlin sound, but it's done with like an ambient sensibility, and a lot of the musicians are using it, but they're using it in a more ambient way, for lack
sure.
of a better term, than if you went and listened to, they're just trying to do their version of Tangerine Dream.
Yeah, if you're doing the Kraftwerk or Tangerine Dream thing, that's very blatant sequencer computer music, and
still
that's
very rock.
But it's still, you know, it's still a beautiful genre. But there are a lot of people that are using sequences, not necessarily Berlin School or Germanic, but in a more ambient way. You're right. And the cool thing about this song, you're talking about Waves Dream of Breaking, that riff that comes in after the intro, that pulsing delayed sequence thing, is actually something that my friend Matthew Stewart created for me, because he built a modular synth rig and he brought it over and we were tripping out on it. And we had a lot of fun playing that. So I had him come back specifically for this song because I had a very specific tempo and I knew that the scale and the key it was going to be in. And I said, hey, I'd really like to see if we can create this almost random, plucky, organic synth part that never repeated itself, but also was intelligently designed to be emotional using a specific notes in the scale. So we spent a bunch of time and built that and synchronized it to my system, and we recorded like 20 minutes of that. And then I went back later and did all the delay and the subharmonic synthesis, and I really turned it into something that I thought was so organic it almost didn't sound like a synth anymore. And that's when I got excited, because I was like, it might be sequenced, it might be, you know, generated, but this has a soul, this has a vibe, and it makes you lean into the speakers. And that's when I was like, okay, because I've never sequenced anything in my life. Every album I've made, all the music I make is my hands on keys or a controller or drums or guitar. I've never like used the mouse and like draw music, you know, it's all played by my hands. So this was the first time I'd ever allowed an AI entity into a track. But then once I had that, I got to play all this really fluid music around it.
Yep.
And it was really Matthew Stewart's modular sequence, deeply processed, and then the CP70 together. That's really what you're hearing through the whole first half of the song.
Well, you had posted a picture online with you and a lot of hand drums. And so there's a lot of organic and real percussion
big
that's
time
on here.
I yeah.
mean, you know, a great collection, seeing the instruments that you had around you. And so they're all over this, right? I mean, I could.
Yeah. Almost all of those instruments were played on the album. You know, there are certain tracks on the album that are a lot more ethnic and a lot more ethno ambient as a genre.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, most of that percussion is real, not sampled. Really giant sounds like taiko drums and thunder drums, those are probably samples, but I still played them with my hands. But I love the sound of Eastern Native American percussion. You know, I just love it. So yeah, bells, shakers, rattles, stuff from Kenya, big frame drums. I have a Boran from Ireland. Just all these things are just cool. And even though I'm making, you know, kind of electronic ethno ambient music, I think the Eastern earthen percussion sounds and the brass elements in there with my space guitar stuff and all my synthesizers is a wonderful balance of tone and sounds. And, you know, there are some songs where I really lean on that, and there's some songs that don't have any of it. It's just kind of whatever the song was asking for, you know, when I was making it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it adds that. I mean, the acoustic instruments, I mean, having them there, I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, is there some drum kit on there too?
The only song that has a drum kit is track two, which is This Burning Sky.
Okay, so that's a kit. Yeah.
Okay. And that's Matthew Stewart, my same friend who brought his modular synthesizer rig over here for track one. He came into the studio here, and I had a very kind of a specific vibe. I wanted it, and it's just for the third chorus, the third act of the song. I said, I want this song to get bigger than it already is. And the only possible way to do that is to layer a drum kit on top of all the ethnic percussion and the giant noise hits and the planets exploding and all that. So and that was really fun to have him in here pounding on stuff, you know?
Yeah. That track really grabbed me right away. I wanted to talk about the vocals on there too, of course. What a focal element of the song that just builds and builds and is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Working with vocalists how did that come about, adding the vocals and you know, it's improvised, or was it kind of worked out, or
not exactly. We're talking about the singer is Nidhi Bhatmuli. She's okay. Indian, here in San Diego. Beautiful person. I had worked with her on a film score. I scored an Indo-American film where I needed Indian instruments, and I had worked with her in the studio, and I just love her voice. And she really will take my melodic ideas and take them into her own spirit, her way of expressing herself, and just create some amazing stuff. So once I had this track, you know, we're talking about the second song, This Burning Sky. It starts with a guitar riff. And the guitar riff was the first thing that happened. You know, it's a guitar riff that had been in and around my mind for years. And once I started writing music around it, I was like, wow, this is sounding really mysterious and kind of Eastern. And it was almost like angry, but sad. And I was like, yeah, I think I need to get Nidhi in here and turn this into basically a like epic cinematic anthem.
And on this album, like,
Oh,
And on this album, like, a lot of guests come in on this, you know, and I had heard Benji's music before. We have some here. We have some of his music here. And so I was familiar with it, and also and the instrument. This was some I like what he did on this, because I went back and searched his name and kind of pulled up some of the tracks in our library that we had from him, and just kind of, you know, just listened to him playing. Right.
Yeah.
And then he's on here too. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Benji, you know, and since you know his music, you know his vibe, he's an insanely talented person and musician, and he plays many instruments. He is a master of the tabla. From India, which takes 20 years to master, which he did. And on this song we're talking about, which is track 6, it's called The Bliss You've Always Carried. He plays Ezraj, which is a bowed instrument. It's kind of like a cross between a small cello and a sitar, but you bow it. And it has sympathetic resonating strings. So it almost has like an acoustic reverb-y thing. And the way it's traditionally played is with a lot of sliding of notes and slurs and very sultry, kind of sexy, you know, riffs. And when I was coming up with the ambient texture that's in the back of the whole track, I was just creating the space. And I go, man, how cool would it be if Benji would play Ezraj on this song? Yeah. So I wrote kind of some basic melodies and I sent it to him, and he was into it, luckily for me. And he did just a few takes, and everything he did was just, oh, it's magic. And to me, I don't know how it is for you, but for my music, which is so huge and dreamy and spacey and synthesizers and delayed guitars, to have this acoustic instrument in the center channel expressing emotive, almost vocal-like things is such a great, full, emotional, spiritual sound. And it's new for me. You know, there's a lot of stuff on this record that I haven't done before, but this is definitely one of them. But I just love Benji's work, and I really hope I get a chance to work with him again.
Yeah, bring the tablas by.
Exactly. Yeah. And everything else he plays, he's amazing.
Yeah. What are some other things that were kind of a musical first, or something that you hadn't really explored yet, and it wound up on In?
Well, you know, I have 4 guest artists on this album. You know, we talked about Benji. We talked about Nidhi Bhatmuli. She sings on track 2, This Burning Sky. The other one was Miriam Stockley. And Miriam Stockley is, if you don't know who Miriam Stockley is, just search her name on the internet. She's amazing. She's like, I can't even get excited enough about how amazing and what a great vocalist she is. She did all of the Audie Amos albums with Carl Jenkins. She did four of those. She has like three or four solo albums. She was with this really awesome electronic group in the 90s called Praise. It was amazing. But the ability to go to her at this point in my life, because I've been a fan since like 91, like a fan, like, you know, like whoever one of your favorite artists is, you know, like yeah. that. So for her to say, yeah, I love to sing on it is something that you would, of course, take advantage of. Why would I pass up on that? And unlike using Niti Bhatmuli on the second track, with Miriam, I really wanted her to explore some of her own styles that she does, because she's South African, spent a lot of time in London. She has very special techniques that no one else does. She has a technique she calls her cello voice, where it's almost like she's humming, but her lips aren't together, and you hear some of the breath. It's super organic. And then she does this sort of lullaby childlike vocals that we you know, quadruple tracked as like a little choir in parts. And I really, you know, I wrote the song around her, and I gave her specific ideas and then told her to just go with it. But it's a first for me to have a song of mine that has the vocals featured so prominently, but yet the vocals are also super spacey and treated with the same kind of stuff I'd put on my guitars, I put on Miriam's voice. Okay. So really, really experimental, actually. Okay. So yeah, that was cool. And then there's cello on, is it track 9, You Already Are? Is that what that is? Is that what track it is?
Yeah, electric cello.
Yeah, Matthew Schoening. And you should, you know, search him. Matthew Schoening is S-C-H-O-E-N-I-N-G. Yeah, he's in Mount Shasta. He plays electric cello. But the first time I saw him perform was at an awards show that I was involved with. And he plays his cello kind of how I play guitar. He's using delays and reverbs, and he was looping stuff and creating these textures and then playing melodies over them. And I was like, I got to work with this guy, you know, just amazing. So I knew in that, I think that was in 2013, I don't know when it was when I saw him, but I knew that I was going to ask him to play on one of my songs, and this was the song for him to do it on. And what a great time we had together just working on the ideas. And I gave him very specific melodies, and he's really bold. He's like, your melody's really cool, but on my instrument, I would play it like this. And I'm like, you're right. Yeah, just do you, you know? Yeah. So I feel super stoked to have, you know, these four different guest artists, you know, session musicians play on the album, but also really respect my very kind of unique way of making music and weaving their special talent into the electronics and the ambient space.
Yeah, and it seems like they all have kind of a connection. Well, I mean, some had a connection to electronic music, but did everybody? I mean, Benji did he?
Not Benji. Niti, no. Niti is a classical, you know, Indian Hindi vocalist.
Okay.
And Benji does a lot of kirtan music and Indian music,
right.
And a lot of the, you know, the new age chants and stuff, and he's just a master at what he does. And the people that he's surrounded with are just insane players. But, you know, I don't think that Benji's done anything as dreamy or as electronic as the song we did, The Bliss You've Always Carried. But all of them were really open to diving into my world and letting things get big. And I'm really thankful that they embraced, you know, what I was going for.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting perspective, because as much as you're inviting them into what you do, they're also inviting you into what they do. You know, it's like there's enough of, I guess, a diversity of musical styles that, you know, can each influence one another, you know, versus working with somebody that's a little bit more closer to, you know, a particular style that you do. That's
true.
Interesting how that's happened.
I've never thought about that until just now, that everyone that I've, these four people that I asked to come play on the album are super different from my music. And it's not like I'm asking, Eric Wallow or my friend John Jenkins to come in and play synth or space guitars. You know, these are from these people are from different worlds. And it is, I think that's the reason why I really wanted to bring those instruments into some of these tracks, because I've been in the electronic realm, in the ambient realm for so long, and I love it, and it's really what I'm about. But I was ready to like level up with and invite some of these people in here and get real and record some real stuff while still making it really huge sounding, which is a blast.
Yeah. Acoustic and electric as they blend together.
Yeah.
It's come up on going through this journey of the podcast. It's just come up different times where there's been different artists that have been on the show. And the first time, I can't remember exactly what episode it was, but there was someone, it was their first time to ever do work with electronic music at all on what they were involved in. And so obviously I'm going to say, well, what was it like to be in the world of ambient electronic music, you know? And so, but then vice versa, you know, you've got the other side, somebody that works electronic music. And so it's a really great, it's like an ultimate collaboration. You know,
yeah, it is. You
know, is there an ultimate really sharing of music and inviting somebody into this world, and they invite you into their world at the same time, working with you? You know,
yeah, and you're creating this hybrid kind of music that I don't want to say it hasn't been done before, but it definitely has not been done before like this at all. So that to me that's the drive. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And to hear the final product of these instruments and this other stuff together in one huge piece is really cool. I'm liking the what happened out of all of this, you know.
Well, after we had when we talked on the show before, and listening to this album, I was fascinated whenever and I know that I was listening to it on this album. You know, there was different tracks where I was like trying to listen into it and at the same time take it all in. That, you know, you approach your music like a song form of other music with choruses and stuff and thinking in chord progressions and I really just I think that's so awesome in ambient music. Sometimes, you know, people will take those and that they just they're not working in that. They're working in a very free flowing form, or everything's modal, or, you know,
true.
There isn't a per se bridge and stuff like that, which is fine, of course. But I've always found that very interesting, that, you know, your influence from U2 and other rock musics and things that just have arena sound to them.
Yep.
You found a way to bring that into electronic music and
and
work in that and have those different song forms, but then someone that just listens to it's not necessarily going to hear those song forms, but you have
No, they're not.
It seamlessly kind of works together. Once you point it out, someone that knows song forms can listen in for them, but it doesn't just, you know, it's not right there in forefront.
Yeah, and that's another thing I haven't, you know, necessarily directly thought about. But yeah, I do write music. I don't want to say traditionally, but I like to have an intro, and I like to have a verse and a chorus and a bridge, and there's always a big breakdown and a big buildup to a huge hit, and then a big end. And sometimes, you know, instead of A-B-A-B, you know, verse, chorus, sometimes it's A-B-A-C-D-A, you know, sure. Wherever the song is taking me. But I am very influenced by Depeche Mode and Ice House and Simple Minds and U2 and these kinds of, big, huge sounding records. But all of those songs, every Depeche Mode song, you know, has a verse and a chorus and a bridge. And I think that I like writing music that is going to take you places.
Yeah, and that's what those forms did.
Yeah.
I mean, when you and I were growing up, now in pop music a lot, there'll be a lot of, you know, and it is what it is. But there's a lot of, the songs aren't as complex. It might just be A and B. They might start with a hook.
Yep.
They might have a lot of cyclic songs nowadays where the whole song, the verse and the chorus is same four chords, and there is no bridge. There is no pre-chorus. And we grew up with like songs that you know, earlier than that had verses, choruses, pre-chorus, bridge.
Yeah.
You know, they had all these parts. And And the music, it took me on a journey more, too.
Same here.
A, B, or something like that. That's more just kind of what's going on now.
I think if
songs written in the 80s or 70s or even 90s.
You know? Well, if you think about the music that's popular now, or the music that's been popular in the last 10 years specifically,
yeah,
they'll start with the chorus. You know, in the first 30 seconds, you kind of hear everything. And they'll have like three or four chords, and that's it for the whole song.
Cyclic songs.
And it's the dynamics. It's taking the drums away and bringing them back, or getting small and getting big. And that's not bad, but compared to this kind of music we're talking about, this modern pop music, all the stuff I listened to was hugely overachieving compared to all the music that is considered quote unquote pop now. Even if you listen to Journey, Boston,
yeah,
Def Leppard, Foreigner, The Scorpions, all this stuff, you know. It was just, and that was pop music. All the stuff I just mentioned was full on pop music.
Electric Light Orchestra was a big discovery.
ELO was actually my first LP I ever got, was Out of the Blue in 79.
Okay, so.
Blew my mind. Yeah.
So, okay. That's awesome, because I bought that album at a garage sale, and I bought it without hearing it just because the
spaceship. Because of the spaceship, and you opened up.
And the 8-track.
That's it. Yeah.
That's why I bought it sight unseen. And then when I listened to it, because I was older when I got it, but I remember Mr. Blue Sky.
Oh, man.
But I didn't.
Untouchable song.
Maybe Telephone Line, but I bought it, you know, pretty much the book for the cover.
I have to tell you that, you know, in 1979, I was 10 years old. And I think when I bought it, I was at the record store with my dad or my mom, and they're like, you get to buy one record.
Yeah.
And I looked at the spaceship on the front. Yeah. It's ELO. I had no idea what it is. And I opened it up. And like you said, it's this double gatefold. It's a double LP with two records, and you open it up to this big cinematic picture inside the spaceship. And I was like, I want this one. And I sat and listened to that on my record player and looked at the artwork for months. That's all I did, is listen to that first record. And that was very foundational for me, was Jeff Lynne and having the strings and the orchestra and rock music together, and very, we keep saying cinematic, but very, you know, you get a lot of visions and mental pictures from that record and the kind of songs he wrote. And speaking of that, you know, this album In is my first album ever that's coming out on vinyl.
Oh, awesome.
And it's a double album, and it's a gatefold, and there's two big pink CD, pink discs with the galaxy pattern and amazing artwork. And people are already freaking out about the vinyl. And I love the fact that here in 2022, the vinyl revival is so big that the record label's getting behind it and producing these really pricey limited edition sets. And how cool is that, that people are going to listen to my music on a record? That's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So cool.
Well, when you started you were releasing in the height of the CD.
Yeah, 96 was my first record. It's like CDs were the best thing we had ever heard.
Yes.
And CDs do sound great. I still love listening to CDs. CDs are cool. I mean, they're shiny, futuristic silver discs, man.
Yeah.
And you put them in, and you get to listen to your songs. They're just like little records that are shiny.
And you can play them in your car. No,
that's right.
I pan around them.
Oh, look at that, man! You've got a lot of CDs in your room, man.
I was so glad whenever the cool music from the 80s and 90s finally made it to the thrift stores. So I could get these cool albums for like $1 because people finally threw those out and just ripped them or whatever they did.
Yep.
I don't need them. I've got a streaming service.
Yeah. As soon as everyone was doing, I think it wasn't mp3.com, but as soon as iTunes happened, mm-hmm. you started seeing lots of cool CDs for near next to nothing everywhere. So that was way cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, on vinyl. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vinyl.
Wow. Yeah,
I mean, it's that kind of ties exciting. Back to the ELO, to Out of the Blue, right?
It's you know what? It ties directly to that, because the experience I had as a kid, really experiencing the power of a recording, a stereo recording, and how powerful that can be as an emotional experience to have something I've put you know, years of my life into, that someone else is going to possibly be able to have that kind of intimate experience with a record player and this big giant piece of art. It's just like, it's a dream. It's a dream come true. I think it's a great way to experience music.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I heard this podcast, and it was like Tom Hanks is on this podcast, and he was talking about how playing a record was like making a fire in the fireplace. And I don't know what his quote was, but you know, you got these things to do to make a fire, and for a vinyl, you've got to, you know, take the thing out of the, you open it up and you got to pull it out of the sleeve real carefully.
Yeah.
Put it on there. And so there's this physical action that you get to do that's even more, more intricate than, you know, putting a disc in, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, there's more pieces to the puzzle of playing a record than even a disc.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about is this physical act is almost ritualistic. Mm-hmm. And while you are, the first thing you do is you pull the record out of your collection and you look at the cover and you're like, yeah, I'm going to listen to this, man. I love this record. And then if it's a gatefold, you open up and you're like, oh man, this is so cool. And then you pull a sleeve out. And like you said, and then you carefully pull the record out of the sleeve and then you put it on the turntable. It's a ritual, you know, and you're like praying to the turntable, you know, and you put it on there and then you put the needle down and you wait for that first sound to hit you. It's like that experience is lost in the Spotify world. So I'm super jazzed about the idea that people are going to be experiencing my music in a ritualistic way.
The gatefold is fantastic.
That's it.
It makes me think of another one that I was given, Todd Rundgren, Something Anything.
Oh man.
Which is it's a triple album, I believe, and he plays mostly instruments on all of it. And
there was, of course,
on there. Couldn't I just tell you, I saw the light, Hello, It's Me.
Yep.
But the gatefold is, I still to this day, I played a track from it, and the gatefold is fantastic. You open it up, and he's in this dark room, looks like it's like a living room in a house. There's stuff everywhere. It's shadowy. He has the patio door with the light coming through it and the curtains, and he's like got his hands up like he's in front of an audience with a microphone.
Wow.
In front of him and a guitar around him. And uh-huh. It was so cool because he's like recording this rock and he's doing it himself. And he's like on an imaginary stage in front of him in this room. And I love that gatefold. One of my favorite gatefolds.
I'm totally going to have to check that out.
Yeah, check that one out. It's like just cool. And he's in shadows, you know, like it's shot from behind. And
I love that.
Fantastic. Oh, I wanted to talk about your artwork because
sure.
Brant Campbell doing macro photography. So what is considered macro photography?
Macro photography is everything where you have to use a special lens to get very close to something very small to capture it. And when I, you know, once I had the concept really dialed in and a lot of the songs were coming together, I was imagining, you know, what is this album going to look like? And I had come from three records with John Jenkins where we did this epic trilogy and every album was a massive, vast landscape. You know, mountains and all this stuff. And I was really ready to do the opposite of that. And because this album, even though all the songs on In end up getting really huge and epic, they almost all start with tiny sounds and simple melodies. And I wanted to capture something like that. And, you know, I started looking at a lot of macro photography, which I've always been amazed by, even as a kid with, I don't know if you remember these things, they're called encyclopedias.
Oh, yeah.
But we had those in the house, and I found, like, you know, there's pictures in there of electron microscope and like ants close up. So I've always been fascinated by it. But when I found his work, I just fell in love with the way he captured the light in these really tiny places. And I reached out to him and I said, I'm doing this album and it has a concept and I'd like to hire you to create a bunch of macro images. And we talked about the water droplets on the feathers and the color scheme and the light. And he's like, yeah, he went out and created all of the artwork himself. You know, he took all the photos. And then once I got all of those together, I worked with Daniel Pipitone, who's the artist at the record label at Spotted Peccary Music. And together we colored and treated and got all of those photos and all of his, you know, his beautiful way of making the package put together. And it's so luminous and bright and full of energy, but at the same time, it's all, you know, the stuff that's on the cover was probably smaller than a square inch, the entire cover, or maybe less than that, just tiny. I'm a big fan of his work, and he's in the Pacific Northwest. He's in Portland, which is the same place where the record label is headquartered. And if you can find him on Instagram or find his website, I think it's brantcampbell.com. Yeah, and I just love how it turned out, and I'm super thankful for him to taking on the project.
It's really breathtaking. So it's a raindrops, water droplets on a feather.
Yeah, or water droplets on feathers. You know, I wasn't there when he took them, but he captured the vibe, and I think he backlit it. So there's a light coming from behind going through the water drops and through the feathers, and it created almost this dark foreground and super luminous background. And it almost looks like a landscape, but it's very dreamlike. And to me, the cover looks like the record sounds. And that was my goal. So I'm really happy with that.
The color pattern. It looks like just glowing orbs. It's fantastic with the way the water is. It's
Thank you.
Crystal balls. It's like it's his work. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And I want to talk about the music video, too.
Yeah,
people can go and look at the music video from
the first single.
The first
single is Waves Dream of Breaking, and that's track one on the album. And you can go to my YouTube channel. I think it's just David Helpling Official. You'll see the color scheme in my profile picture with the sort of magentas and the cyan colors in there. But yeah, if you go to my YouTube channel, that music video dropped the same day the single was released. That was on March 4th. And so far, it's been insane how many people are watching it and how many people are commenting these gushing comments. They just love it. And for me, working on an album like this for so long, I wasn't sure how people are going to, you know, respond to something that's a bit different from me, you know, especially when the last album was Rune, which was 100% space guitar. I don't think this album could be any different than my last. Yeah. I'm kind of like, hey, are people going to dig it? But the first single is blowing up and everyone loves it. And I'm just super stoked that there's a video to go with it to let people experience it that way.
There's something to be said for taking the journey with the artists and being appreciating the fact that it's not the same. You know, I mean, for me, that's always been an interest, you know, like, okay, they do something different. This is great. You know,
I'm
taking you someplace else.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a big fan of Bjork. I always have been. And every album of hers is different and she's always evolving. You know, her first one was called Debut and the second one was Post. And Homogenic was the third one. But Homogenic and then Vespertine, when she hit all that, I was like, what? It was so different, but yet so her. And and speaking of that, you know, Bjork's work on Vespertine and also the soundtrack to the film she did called Selma Songs directly influenced my string arrangements on track three.
Okay.
And if you listen to that song, it's called Only What's Been Taken. That vibe and those chords and those strings really came from my influence of listening to Bjork's work on Homogenic and Vespertine. And it just really came out somehow subconsciously. And I realized later, yeah, that's super Bjorky, which I love. And I'm proud to say that, you know, she's one of my influences.
That I'm gonna listen to it again for that. Yeah, me too. I have a stack of her records. If she puts out a record, I'm going to get it.
Nice.
The Biophilia album.
Yep.
The Biophilia album was, you know, they're all different. The Biophilia album was one where I remember in an interview she said that she was making the songs with shapes in mind, like bases that were trapezoids, and she was doing these interfaces that were using shapes. And of course, Vespertine has that quality of like almost music box and glass harmonica.
Yep,
like
exactly. That, you know, she did use music boxes and glass harmonica. All of these albums are kind of concept-y, but as she has progressed, her music has gotten more and more experimental and more concept, which I love.
Yeah,
but
too.
Sometimes it gets a little less pop, so it might be a little a little too much for some people. But I love the fact that Bjork is still right now pushing the envelope and doing new things every record. So the Biophilia you were talking about.
That was cool.
And then she did, was it Volca? What was the one that was all voices?
I think it was.
That was amazing.
The Earth Intruders.
Oh, man, that's a great song. That was produced by Timbaland. Super cool.
Yeah, that's a great one. Anytime she puts one out, it's like, I'm going to get it no matter what. I found a remix album by her from years ago. Telegram. And I just ran across it probably maybe 2019 and grabbed it right away because I didn't know it existed. And I'm like, okay, well, here we go.
Do you dig it? You like it?
I like it a lot, actually. I didn't know. You never know how you're going to like rework songs. You know,
I think the cool thing with that is she did three records and then she did Telegram, which is a remix album, but she was directly involved in all the remixes. It's not like, you know, there's all these people that just did them and sent them in and you could hear it in the tracks. It's really cool that you even know about these records.
Because
a lot of people I talk to, they're like, Bjork, what?
Oh, I've got a stack. Her records are actually interestingly at home because most of the music's up here and at home there's a lot of world music. For catalog, we were doing some cataloging and this and that. But all of her albums that I have, the stack of every record she's done, are actually at home. So it's nice to have them there to put them on the CD player. I was listening to Post not that long ago. So. Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to listen to those strings on that again for that interview.
Yeah, listen to Homogenic for sure. Yeah. I think there's that song Joga and Bachelorette.
Yep.
They're string octet. And so if you listen to the strings on track three on this record, Only What's Been Taken, very grandiose strings, but not a really big orchestra. You can almost hear the players. And that was really important for me.
Yeah, to hear the strings.
Yeah, I really hear the individual. I want to hear the cellos and I want to see them in the space. And I want to hear the basses and I want to hear the violas in both violin sections. And I want to be able to listen and see them in my mind, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. Right now, the album is out right now and people can find it. Go find it is what I say. Find it. So it's out on Spotted Peccary.
The album is out everywhere on April 15th. I don't know when this is airing, but it is everywhere April 15th. So if you stream, go to where you stream, it's there. If you want to grab the double CD or the double vinyl, you can go to ambientelectronic.com, which is the home website for the record label, and you can order the vinyl, the CD. There's a limited edition set that comes with a signed art print, and these are all hand numbered and signed. Just really, really cool stuff. Plus, you can download the 2496 Studio Master from Ambient Electronic as well.
That is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you on here. And for people that are like, they listen to our audio right now and we can talk visual things, in the chat, I put you the Something Anything cover. And maybe people will go listen to that. And then also, I don't like to talk to all of them out there directly because I want them to listen to us, but I want to tell them, you just heard it. Find the album, listen to In, please. Listen to it. You will enjoy it. And you'll be able to take a journey over a double album of some fantastic soundscapes and instruments and tonalities and guests and music. It's wonderful, beautiful album.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you. I'm excited for people to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. And let's do this again. And thanks for talking to me today and being able to talk about In and to explore the album a little bit conversationally. And the audience out there can go listen.
Yeah, they can go listen right now. It's right cool. Now. And it's always great talking to you. We have so much in common. We speak the same language and it's always great. And I love how you hear my music and the way you hear things and the questions you ask is always just, surprising, but also really feels like home. So
thank you for saying,
you know, anytime you want to talk about stuff, I'm down.
Love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. It's great to be able to chat and catch up. And I want to mention, you know, on your Instagram, you know, those of you listening, you're listening right now, check out the Instagram because I love your photography.
Thank you.
And I like how, you know, you're capturing the micro with the micro. with the macro, if that makes sense. Right?
Yeah, that's true. I'm cruising around and I see things that are beautiful and I take pictures and tweak them and put them up on Instagram. And sometimes I'll post stuff about my music. Sometimes I post, you know, pictures of things that I think are cool. And I like it that people that are following me for my music also think the images are cool. You know, because I kind of feel like they're all related to each other, especially with this big double album. So, follow me on Instagram and you'll see all kinds of crazy stuff.
It's always very positive and always very beautiful, and it's very much appreciated. So,
thank you. Yeah, just trying to put some brightness and some inspiration out into the universe. You know,
it needs it all the time. We say it really needs it in this, and people will say it. We really need that now. We need it all the time.
Especially now. Yeah, you hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a continual inspiration. And
when did we not? What year did we not?
Yeah,
I want to know.
We need things to get excited about, things to get inspired about, things to make us want to create, you know? So, yeah, it's cool. So a great online community on Instagram, Twitter, and even Facebook. There's just a lot of really cool people digging the music, so...
Yeah.
It's pretty cool time we live in.
Yeah, definitely a community and
a
solid great community at that. So
for sure.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man, and thanks for spinning the record. And let's do this again.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks again to David Helpling for being on this episode of Tones and Drones. It's always great when he returns to chat. For more information about his new album, In, you can visit spottedpeccary.com. Also, ambientelectronic.bandcamp.com. Tones and Drones is produced in the studios of 91.3 KVLU. You can also listen to the Tones and Drones radio show, which airs at 10 p.m. Central Time on KVLU, and you can stream the show and, of course, the station at kvlu.org. Going to close this episode with another selection from David Helpling's album In, a song called Here All Along. I'm Jason Miller. Thanks again for listening to Tones and Drones, and may music bring you peace and joy.